And we are on air for the Las Vegas NASCAR Race Review and Hot Topics Sound Off. Joining me for tonight's show will be our co-host, Sal Segala. He's not here yet, but I'll go ahead and review our agenda for tonight. And we'll introduce him as soon as he does come on. Okay, we're going to start with a few updates from the ARCA Menards series. The ARCA East has already wrapped up their season, and then we're going to review the ARCA West series at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. They actually raced at the Bullring in Las Vegas. Next, we're going to review the truck series at Bristol. That's all during our first half hour. And then in the next half hour, we'll review the NASCAR Xfinity and Cup Series at Las Vegas. At 9:30 tonight, we will have our NASCAR Hot Topics Sound Off, and we'll definitely look forward to that as well. Okay, so just to get us started here, we are going to go ahead and get into our introduction here of Sal Segala. First of all, Sal, welcome back.
Thank you, Sharon.
Okay, I've already gone through the review of the evening. We'll just real quick talk about the next race for the ARCA Menards series, and that is the Tsuchi PowerPex 200 on October the 2nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time at Salem Speedway. It will be broadcast on MAV TV. If fans have that, they can follow along there. If not, you can also follow along at ArcaRacing.com, where they have a radio broadcast as well as their Race Central that gives you live updates from the track. Now, keep in mind, this race is also the finale for the Sioux Chief Showdown, so we'll know who our Sioux Chief champion is, conclusion of the Sioux Chief PowerPex 200 on October the 2nd at Salem Speedway. So a big night on October 2nd next weekend. So,
yeah, it's going to be a big night for the how else could you put it, for the 18 and under, for the young guns that are coming up through the through this series, because I'm sure a lot of people don't realize that this actually series is for, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's for 18 years and younger.
Well, we have drivers that do race that are older, but right now it feels like it's for the young guys, because that's who we have racing. But let's go ahead and cover the points for the ARCA series real quick here, and what they are racing for next weekend.
Are you talking about the, excuse me, Sharon, the Sioux Chief or just the ARCA series?
Which one do you have up?
I have either. I can get either one up, I think.
Okay,
I can get either one up,
with,
yeah.
Whichever
Which
one
you
want to go with first.
Okay, I have the Sioux Chief.
Okay, do the
Sioux
Chief.
Sioux Chief. Okay, so Sioux Chief, we got number one, Ty Gibbs, leading the points. Second in points is Corey Heim. Third in points is Nick Sanchez. Fourth in points is Thad Moffitt, and the top five is Taylor Gray. Those are the top five.
Okay, so that championship will be decided next weekend.
Yeah, and it almost looks like it's going to be between, well, it almost looks like Ty Gibbs already has it locked up. It's a lot of 17 points. There's a lot of points to make up in one race.
Okay, what about the ARCA Menards series?
Especially if the car count. If they don't have a big car count for this race, then
then
everybody knows, it's going to make it just that much harder.
Salem is kind of a standard for the ARC series. It's a very historic track for the ARC Menard series. So I expect the car count to be fairly decent.
Yeah, that's and I hope so too, you know, because you know it makes it more exciting for the drivers, for the fans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, instead of, you know, just, you know, a driver going in there and saying, well, hey, you know, we have 8-9 cars, you know what, it's a lock. You know, I just got to go make laps, you know, which is usually what happens. But, you know, hopefully, you know, that, you know, it'll make it an enjoyable race, you know, and a good way to end, for them to end their season.
Yeah.
ARC Menards is a whole different ball game. Once again, Ty Gibbs leading the points. Corey Himes in second, Dad Moffitt's third, Nick Sanchez fourth, and Brad Smith to round out the top five in the ARC Menards series standings for 2021. And then in sixth, we got Drew Dollar, Taylor Gray, D.A. Wilson, Kyle Sieg, and Jesse Love round out the top 10 in points.
Okay, so really a two-man race in that event. We'll be previewing and giving a few more details on that on Thursday night. But let's go to the Bullring at Las Vegas for the ARCA Menards Series West. They raced this past week on Thursday night, and it was Taylor Gray coming home with the trophy from the Las Vegas Bullring.
Yeah, that was an exciting victory for Taylor. You know, especially, you know, after, you know, what he's had to, you know, overcome, you know, when he had the, you know, the injury earlier in the season, you know, to come back. And actually, this is the second win in a row because he did pick up the win in Portland, you know, when, you know, when Jake Drew and I can't remember the other driver had that, had those penalties. So actually, Taylor Gray picks up two wins in a row. And Vegas is a tough race. I usually cover this race. But because of COVID, because I've had COVID, I wasn't able to get out there the Thursday. But I was able to watch some of the highlights from it, and it was a dominating win. You know,
We're very happy that you're recovering from that, Sal. I know there's still some residual, but at least you're feeling better now, right?
Yeah, I'm doing a little bit better. You know, I mean, it's just a weird virus, you know. I took it lightly when all my friends were getting it, and now that I have it, it's different. But you know what? I just have to keep motoring on, and you know, there'll be times when I'll be pausing, you know, to catch my breath. But,
right. Okay, just to give the rundown here of this race, we had some drivers that were out for various and assorted reasons, including Mariah Boudreau, who was involved with a crash, as was Bridget Burgess and Amber Balcaine. Paul Pedroncelli had a brake issue. Amber Slagle had problems with the radiator, as did John Wood. So none of those drivers were able to finish the race. But the top 10 were, of course, Taylor Gray, the top finishing rookie, followed by another rookie, Jake Drew, finishing in second. Then it was Trevor Huddleston, Joey East, another one of the rookies, finishing in fourth, and Kyle Keller, another rookie, rounding out the top five. The next five were Cole Moore, Paul Pedroncelli Jr., Takuma Koga, Josh Stanopoulos, and rounding out the top 10 is Christian Rose. In that group, I believe out of the top 10, there were seven drivers that were rookies, only three non-rookies in that top 10.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. There was also five women in this race, too.
Yeah.
The race, this race, you know.
That's amazing.
Unfortunately, all of them had their issues, you know, went out. But, I mean, yeah, there was, we have five women that were part of this race. And just to mention, Jake Drew, they got a new name for him. They call him P2 Drew. because he just can't seem to win a race because all the second place finishes he has, and he went on Instagram and posted that his new nickname is P2 Drew now, so he's got two races to try and make better on that.
To try to come up with that victory. Okay, now let's take a look at the point standings because that tightened up a little bit with this race, Jay, or Sal. I'm sorry.
Yes, it did. Actually, it brought Jake Drew within 7 points of the championship because Jesse Love had a flat tire, had his issues on Thursday night. So leading the points is Jesse Love. In second is Jake Drew. Third is Cole Moore, he's just silent. Hasn't been really, made that much of so much noise, but 14 points out. He still has an outside chance, especially when they get to Phoenix, because we know Phoenix is going to have that big car count, and there's going to be a lot of points up for grab in Phoenix. And then fourth is Joey East. Fifth is Paul Petroselli Jr. Run out the top five. And then from there, then we go down to sixth, which is Trevor Huddleston, which is Jake Drew's teammate from Sunrise Ford. Seventh is Todd Sousa. Eighth is Takuma Koga. Ninth is Bridget Burse. And rounding out the top ten is Bobby Hillis Jr. Actually, Takuma from Japan, this is by far the best season he's ever had. He's never finished. I don't think he's ever finished in the top 10 in points. And right now he's sitting eighth. And he makes the trip out from Japan to race in the series.
I think it's fantastic. And all top 10 drivers have raced all 7 races. So I tell you what, this is really tightening up. You got a tie for fourth and fifth. Between Joey East and Paul Pedroncelli, they're just 1 point behind third place driver Cole Moore. So those guys are going to be racing for the best possible finish they can get in these next couple of races. And of course, Jake Drew is knocking on the door of the points leader Jesse Love with just 7 points separating them. So this is going to get exciting down to the wire.
Yes, it is. And actually, Takuma Koga signed on for next season to drive again with Jerry Pitts Racing. So,
yes.
So he's coming back. He's coming back for another season in the number 7 Jerry Pitts car. So that's going to be good for him and good for the series.
Yes, indeed. I think it's very, very exciting. Okay, we're going to move on now to the truck series because they also raced at Las Vegas Motor Speedway this weekend. And their next race is going to be at Talladega Super Speedway, which is the second leg of their first round. So this is going to be exciting. Jay and I will preview that race on Thursday night starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time, but the race at Las Vegas was pretty exciting on Friday, September the 24th at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Christian Eckes led a historic 1-2-3-4 finish for Thor Sport Racing for the second consecutive week. The NASCAR Cup Series Truck Series crowned the first-time winner. This week it was Christian Eckes, a 20-year-old New York native, who took the lead on the final restart with 4 laps remaining to claim his first trophy and lead that 1-2-3-4 finish for Thor Sport Racing. He won the Victoria's Voice Foundation 200 presented by Westgate Resorts in the Truck Series at Las Vegas on Friday night. He took the lead with a 3-wide pass following a restart with 4 laps to go. The caution flag waved again on the last lap for a wreck, ending the race under yellow and allowing Eckes to nab his first career victory. Second place driver was Ben Rhodes. Then it was Matt Crafton. Johnny Sauter giving Thor Sport the top 4 spots. In fifth place was Todd Gilliland. And then the next five drivers were Stuart Friesen, Grant Enfinger, Austin Wayne Self, Ryan Truex, and Austin Hill to round out the top 10. Todd Gilliland won stage two and led most of the laps for the night, pacing 66 of 134 laps. Many of the playoff drivers did have troubles throughout the night. The pole sitter and stage one winner, John Hunter Nemechek, had power issues. Zane Smith suffered a flat tire while battling with Nemechek for a position, but also had issues with his battery. Sheldon Creed and Chandler Smith were involved in a frightening crash, and both fortunately were okay. On lap 127, Carson Hocifar spun while attempting to drop to pit road for a flat tire. He was then penalized for NASCAR for intentionally bringing out the yellow and was held a lap on pit road. There were 14 lead changes among 11 drivers and 10 cautions for 39 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 105.358 miles per hour. Christian Eckes won. It was his first victory in 45 Camping World Truck Series races, his first victory and fourth top 10 finish this year, and his first victory and fourth top 10 finish in six races at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Ben Rhodes posted his seventh top 10 finish in 11 races at Las Vegas and his 14th top 10 finish this year. Matt Crafton in third posted his 16th top 10 finish in 26 races at Las Vegas. Chase Purdy finished 13th. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. And we had a little bit of a shakeup in the point standings, and we'll cover that in just a few minutes. Sal, let's go ahead and get your thoughts about the race results here.
Yeah, you know, it was this actually wasn't supposed to be the race, you know, that we've seen all these incidents happening, but I know they did talk about it. We expect to see what happened next weekend for Talladega. I mean, that wreck by Sheldon Creed, boy, that was even, he said he didn't see nothing. He went down because he figured that was where it was open with all the smoke and didn't realize, you know, that Chandler Smith was down there, you know, and T-boned him, you know, and knocked himself, you know, completely, I mean, out of the playoff picture. But, you know, you got to feel bad for Todd Gilliland, who led all those laps and, you know, got shuffled back, you know, on that last restart, you know, with Dorsport. And, you know, like Todd said, there was nothing he could do. You know, he was the dominant, truck. And, you know, Ben Rhodes really had nothing for him. But then you look at Matt Crafton, who was just stuck in there, you know what, and, God, he got one of his best Vegas finishes. It was a crazy, I'll tell you, it was a crazy race. It was a real crazy race.
It was a crazy race. And, you know, there was quite a few accidents, people involved in accidents. Including Haley Deegan was involved. Keith McGee was too slow, so he was out. Nemechek actually finished running, even though he had issues all night long. Tyler Ankrum, Chandler Smith, and Sheldon Creed all involved in accidents. So, yeah, very disappointing for those guys. They've got Talladega that'll be up next. And that's going to be interesting because Talladega is one of those races that you never know what's going to happen. But as you mentioned, this was one of those races that a lot of things that we didn't expect to happen.
And they're talking even about the Sheldon Creed. Remember, Sheldon has said, you know, that he's the favorite. You know, that, you know, after last week's win, you know, he says, yeah, he goes, I'm going to, and this week he just really put himself out of, you know, out of the driver's seat, you know, with that wreck.
Yep.
But I mean, you know, I don't think John Hunter Nemechek is the favorite anymore. It's hard to, I mean, I don't know. It's hard because he had that issue that they still couldn't figure a mechanical issue, you know, where he had to keep coming in, you know, he was slowed down. But, you know, I didn't understand why I think he should have been penalized, because twice when his, instead of going down to the apron, he tried to come back out on the track again. And I think that has to do something with him trying to, this was before Chandler Smith had the wreck. And I think it had something to do with him trying to, hopefully pull a caution or whatever, you know, to help his teammate. But I think NASCAR should have penalized him, because the one time he did go down below the apron and he stopped, and then his truck started, and then he put it back on top of the apron, on top of the white line, back on the track, and then he died again. And I think NASCAR, I know a lot of fans probably didn't see it or think anything, but I think NASCAR should have penalized him a lap or two laps for, you know, for, you know, just like they penalized Josevar for causing his own spin. You know, they held Josevar back a lap. You know, I think they should have held, I think they should have held John Hunter Nemechek back a lap too when his truck died. And when you don't have no power, they tell you go below the white line, and he stayed on the track. But
yeah, I'm sure NASCAR is going to be watching those kind of things. But there's a lot going on in this race. We'll have to see what they do in the future. But let's talk about how the points got shook up this weekend.
Okay, now the points, we got Ben Rhodes leading the points. John Hunter Nemechek in second, Stuart Friesen in third, Matt Crafton in fourth, and Sheldon Creed round out the top five. And then there's only eight drivers in there. That's right. There's only eight drivers in the playoffs right now. Then we go to Carson Hosovar, sixth, Zane Smith seventh, and Chandler Smith eighth. Basically the bottom
four.
Yeah. So basically the bottom eight, the top eight are the ones that are in the, are the ones fighting for the next playoff spot.
That's true. And let me look at the schedule here, because that's gonna make a huge difference here for the truck series.
I believe they're
on the same schedule with everybody else, but it could be. Let me just double check.
With the exception of the Roval.
Yeah, I think the next race is at Talladega, October the 2nd, and then they're going to end up at the Roval. And at the Roval, let me just double check this. No, they actually don't race again. Their elimination race isn't until October 30th at Martinsville Speedway. So they'll race at Talladega this weekend, and then Martinsville will be their elimination race on October the 30th. So that's what I wanted to just confirm. And that's when they will decide who their final four drivers are going to be. So right now, the drivers that are on the bottom, and as you mentioned, one of those drivers is Sheldon Creed. Those guys are vulnerable because Sheldon Creed, Carson Hosovar, Zane Smith, and Chandler Smith are all on the bottom four. The top four are Ben Rhodes, John Hunter Nemechek, and Stuart Friesen, along with Matt Crafton. And what's keeping John Hunter Nemechek up in the top two right now are his 50 playoff points. He's just 6 points behind Ben Rhodes, and that's because he has those five wins. But he could be vulnerable too, because he has not been racing up to the same caliber that he was earlier in the season.
So basically where it sits is that, realistically speaking, Chandler Smith and Zane Smith, they have to win position. They're not in a position where they can, they're going to make it on points.
Carson Hosovar in that same category.
Yeah, and Carson Hosovar too. Yeah, they're in the position. And Carson Hosovar is looking pretty good there for a while. You know, he was up there, you know, above the cut line. you know, and then he got that flat, and then he was his own worst enemy when he spun himself on the track. He should have just come in and pitted and changed tires and went back out, and he'd be golden right now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly,
but
right.
He decided he wanted to pull a, you know, thinking NASCAR isn't going to notice it, but NASCAR, they're looking at all that, especially for the playoff players.
Exactly. I think NASCAR has to start taking a closer look at that stuff and making sure that we're not getting into a new era of shenanigans, if you will, with these playoffs. We talked about it on Hot Topics as well, with Kyle Busch Motorsports playing some games. But hopefully we'll have to see what happens. It hasn't really paid off for them in the long run here. So I think these drivers really need to second-guess themselves with playing these games, because it's hurting them more than it's helping them.
Exactly. It is.
So, anyway, John Hunter Nemechek has the 50 playoff points, which are really helping him right now. The next highest in playoff points is Sheldon Creed, but right now he's in that bottom four, so he's going to have to really race smart coming up here in these next couple of races. And then the other driver with a lot of playoff points is Ben Rhodes. He has 19 playoff points, and Ben Rhodes has to really be smart in these upcoming races as well and see if he can hold on to that top spot.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting Talladega coming up.
Yeah, Talladega, I've got a feeling, is going to shake up the points even more when we go to Talladega. So, and then Martinsville is a short track. A lot can happen on the short track as well. So we've definitely got to keep an eye on these guys. Okay, let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series, Sal. Their next race is also going to be at Talladega Super Speedway on Saturday, October the 2nd. The Sparks 300 will be at 4:30 p.m. What we really want to talk about here is the ASCO Uniforms 302 that took place this last Saturday night at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Josh Berry steals the spotlight in Las Vegas, and Junior Motorsports this time sweeps the podium. Josh Berry seized the opportunity and drove away from the competition Saturday night at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. He was tabbed to substitute for the injured Junior Motorsports driver Michael Annett, and the Tennessee late model champion Berry earned his second win in the Xfinity Series season, claiming an impressive 4.396 second victory in the playoff opener. He was filling in for Michael Annett in the number one. He won the ASCO Uniforms 302 at Las Vegas. The win is his second of the season and his second of the 27-race Xfinity Series career. Junior Motorsports driver Justin Allgaier finished second, followed by another Junior Motorsports driver, Noah Gragson, finishing in third, making it a clean sweep of the podium for Junior Motorsports. Defending champion Austin Cindric finished in fourth place, and Daniel Hemric rounds out the top five. The next five drivers are Brandon Jones, who overcame a pit road penalty to finish sixth. Then it was A.J. Allmendinger, Ty Dillon, Justin Haley, and Harrison Burton rounding out the top 10. Playoff drivers Jeff Burton, Jeremy Clements, Riley Earps were all caught up in a lap 30 incident on a restart, and all three drivers failed to finish the race. Allmendinger picked up his series-high 10th stage win of the season, by winning the opening stage, while Allgaier earned a playoff point for winning the second stage. There were 13 lead changes among seven drivers and six cautions for two yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 123.509 miles per hour. Josh Berry, again, won his second victory in 28 Xfinity Series starts and his second victory and the 11th top 10 finish this year. This is the first victory and second top 10 finish in three races at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Justin Allgaier posted his 12th top 10 finish in 16 races at Las Vegas and his 18th top 10 finish this year. Noah Gregson posted his 6th top 10 finish in 7 races at Las Vegas. And Josh Berry, first, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. So your thoughts about the finishing order here at Las Vegas? So.
Yeah, it was a really different really different one. Once Riley Herbst and all them went out, but man, that win by Josh Berry, boy, I'll tell you, he really put on a clinic at the end. And you know, Noah and Justin, nobody had nothing. They had nothing for him at the end of the race. I mean, he was in his own little world. You know what? And I thought it was pretty cool that instead of doing a burnout, he said he was going to save the car for the next race. You know, so he didn't do a burnout. He just casually went up, and I don't even think he got the checkered flag. I think he even left the checkered flag at the flag stand. He was so excited about the win.
Exactly.
I'd never seen him. I was waiting for him to go up there, and I never seen him go up.
There were several drivers that did have accidents. C.J. McLaughlin actually had an overheating issue. Carson Ware had an electrical issue. Riley Earp, Sam Mayer, Dylan Lupton, Jeb Burton, J.J. Yaley, Alex LeBay, Jeremy Clements, and Joe Graff Jr., all drivers taken out by accidents early in the race. So that was very, very disappointing to see that happen. Riley Earp has had some really good runs here lately. Am I right, Jay, Sal, that Las Vegas is his home track?
Yes. It's his home track. Him and Noah, they don't live too far. They don't really live too far away from each other where they, you know, where their houses are up in the ridge. So yeah, they're pretty close
I'm
to
sure
each other,
that.
But yeah.
I'm sure that was disappointing for Riley.
Oh yeah, it was. It was devastating on his part. You know, he wants so bad, you know, to make it in, and you know, hopefully, you know, at least have a shot at the, you know, championship. But and for all the problems Stuart Haas Racing has been having this year, you know, and he's had his share of issues too. You know what I mean? You know, he still had he can still walk away. You know, with the, you know. So he had a good season, but I mean, you never know what can happen in Talladega too. He can come up with that win and get that magic ticket into the next round.
Yep, we'll have to see what happens. He has been doing a lot better, and I think he is knocking on the door there. Okay, so any other thoughts about the playoff drivers? Myatt Snyder finished 15th as a playoff driver, and then we talked about the other ones. Riley Herbst and Jeb Burton caught up in that accident. Everybody else finished in the top 10.
Yeah, so it's going to be like we talked about. Talladega is going to be a big race, you know, coming up. You know, see how they see how all the drivers respond, you know, and see where all this, you know, plays out after they get out of there.
And it's always unpredictable at Talladega, so anything can happen. And then, of course, Martinsville is a short track where a lot of things can happen as well. Let's go ahead and cover the points report here.
Okay, we did have a shakeup in the points. Austin Cindric took over the lead from A.J. Allmendinger, who's sitting second in points. Third is Justin Allgaier. Fourth is Noah Gragson. Fifth is Daniel Hamrick. And rounding out the top six is Justin Haley, since we only have 12 drivers that are racing for the to make it into the next round. And then from there, we go seventh is Harrison Burton. Eighth is Brandon Jones. Ninth is Myatt Snyder. Tenth is Jeb Burton. 11th is Riley Herbst, and Jeremy Clements is at the bottom of the heat there.
Now, the next two races, Talladega and then the Charlotte Roble, will end the round here, the first round for the Xfinity Series. And as we mentioned, those drivers that are on the bottom four right now, Myatt Snyder, Jeff Burton, Riley Herbst, and Jeremy Clements, they're all in a must-win type of a situation, I think, Jay, or Sal.
Oh, yes. Yeah, they are. They are definitely in a must-win situation. There are too many. I mean, actually, you know, when you look, gosh, I mean, when you look at the points, I mean, it's just amazing how many, you know, just a separation from, you know, from that spot,
yes.
Really, from the 10th, 11th, and 12th spot, is just it's just really it's really big.
It is really big. And you've got drivers like Ty Gibson, 13th, who had three wins this year. Josh Berry, who's currently 17th, had two wins. But that, you know, Josh Berry racing only 20 of the 27 races so far this year. Ty Gibbs racing only 15 of the 27 races, not able to be in these playoffs, but definitely having an impact with Josh Berry winning this weekend. The top two drivers have the most playoff points, with 44 for Austin Cindric, 45 for A.J. Allmendinger. That's what's keeping them up in that spot. Justin Allgaier has been third most at 21 points. And then Noah Gragson, Daniel Hemric, and Justin Haley all have 17, 14, and 15 playoff points, the only drivers with double-digit playoff points. But Talladega, I think, is going to be interesting because just about anybody can win there. What are the chances that one of these bottom four can come up with the victory?
You know, anything is possible. I mean, Myatt Snyder already has one win. So does Jeb Burton. But
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just gonna. You got to remember, Riley Herbst. He's coming to this race with no teammates.
Mm-hmm. That
so
makes it harder,
you know,
for sure.
It makes it harder for him because he's gonna have to fight against the RCR cars and also the Joe Gibbs cars, you know, and the college racing cars, you know, who are all gonna have teammates. So what happens if Riley gets up there leading the race? You know, is he gonna have somebody, you know, help him, or what's gonna happen when if he gets up there,
right,
you know, challenging for the win? You know, that's going to be the big, that's always a game changer here at these play tracks. You know, they talk about, you know, having a teammate, you know, or a partner, to give you that push that you need. So he's really going to have to hope, that somebody, will take him under his wing, you know, if he does happen to get up into that position. Or if they're just going to let him hang.
And then the Charlotte Roble, you've got Austin Cindric and A.J. Allmendinger. Both of those guys are good road course racers. So that's going to be a battle right there, too.
Yeah, that's true. You know, it's going to be interesting these next two races for Riley. He really has his hands full, you know, going into these last, you know, couple races. He's going to have a really good game plan and more than that, he's going to have a fast car.
That is very true. I look for this to be a very competitive race in the Xfinity series for all of these drivers, all of these playoff drivers, because at the end of the Roval at Charlotte, they're going to eliminate four of these drivers. I think Talladega is probably going to shake things up a little bit. We've got four drivers that are at the bottom right now. It wouldn't surprise me if one of those four come up with a victory at Talladega. But anything can and usually does happen at that track. Now, some news in the Xfinity series. NASCAR announced that they're looking at the possibility of adding Portland International Raceway to the 2022 Xfinity series schedule. Have you seen that, Jay, Sal?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen that. And then also also that Daniel Hemric's going to be going to college racing next year, leaving RCR
yes.
to drive for college yes. full-time.
Yeah, I thought that was really great news as well. You know, we've got a lot to look forward to in the 2022 schedule for here in the Xfinity series. It sounds like we should hear about their schedule in the next week or two. And I think it's going to be interesting if they do put Portland on the Xfinity series schedule. I think that's going to be big.
Yeah. Yeah, because then that'll be another road course that they add to the schedule.
Absolutely.
Since Portland's a road course.
It is, and we saw the ARCA Menards series
ARCA West.
Race
yeah.
at Portland, the ARCA West. So now we're going to get a chance to see possibly the Xfinity series race there. And I think that's exciting. I'm really looking forward to that. Okay, we're a few minutes ahead of our schedule here, but that's okay. We're going to go ahead and get into the NASCAR Cup Series. Their next race, again, is at Talladega Super Speedway. The Yellowwood 500 will take place on Sunday, October the 3rd. And again, we'll talk more about that race on our Thursday night show. For now, we're going to get into the South Point 400 that took place Sunday, September the 26th at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. Denny Hamlin punches his ticket into the round of eight with a win at Las Vegas, crossing the finish line to claim the South Point 400 trophy. Denny Hamlin screamed into his team radio, "Viva Las Vegas!" And indeed it was that kind of night for the perennial championship contender, who led a race best 137 of 267 laps to earn his first Las Vegas victory in 20 starts and take an automatic bid into the next round of the playoffs. The 40-year-old Virginian edged out the reigning NASCAR Cup Series champion Chase Elliott by 0.442 seconds. Elliott cut into Hamlin's lead on every one of the closing 10 laps, taking full advantage of the traffic, but was ultimately unable to catch Hamlin's number 11 Joe Gibbs Racing Toyota. Hamlin won the Cup Series race at Las Vegas. It was his second win of the year, his first win at Las Vegas, and the 46th career win. Elliott finished second, followed by Kyle Busch. Then it was Martin Truex Jr. and Ryan Blaney, followed by Tyler Reddick, Brad Keselowski, Kurt Busch, and Kevin Harvick, along with the pole setter Kyle Larson, to round out the top 10. Hamlin led 137 of 263 laps. He retook the lead with 37 laps left following a green flag pit stop, and then went on to win by a very close margin. The win locks Hamlin into the round of eight. Stage one was won by Kyle Larson. Stage two by Denny Hamlin. There were 21 lead changes among 10 drivers, 4 cautions for 21 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 144.643 miles per hour. Again, it was Hamlin's 46th victory in 573 Cup Series races, his second victory in 21st top 10 finish of 21, and his first victory in 10th top 10 finish in 21 races at Las Vegas. Chase Elliott posted his fourth top 10 finish in 11 races in Vegas and his 18th top 10 finish this year. Kyle Busch posted his 12th top 10 finish in 22 races in Las Vegas. And Chase Briscoe, who finished 14th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. So your thoughts about the race results here in Las Vegas for the Cup Series?
Yeah, before the sun came down, when the sun was still out, Kyle Larson looked like he was going to be the driver to beat. And then, things got shaken up, as the, stages started ending, and the weather changed. But for a while there, it looked like Kyle Larson was going to win it. And even Tyler Reddick,
yeah.
he really put on a valiant effort, too, there for a while, too, until the last pit stop, when he, I think he waited a little bit too late. I think he should have pitted earlier than Hamlin. He would have had the fresher tires, and I think he would have been able to keep his track position a little bit better. But
I think Kyle Larson had a bad pit strategy, too. His pit strategy really put him off the cycle and put him back in the pack instead of up at the front.
Yeah, because it knocked him all the way back to, 15th. And, but I think if Tyler Reddick pitted three or four or five laps earlier than Hamlin, he might have had a better shot at, and then Chase just, it was a valiant effort by Chase Elliott, to try and catch him, but, there just wasn't enough laps left to catch him.
He needed five more laps, and I think he would have had him.
Yeah.
Okay, there are only a couple of cars that didn't finish the race. Joey Gase had a really bad hit very early in the race, or relatively early in the race. He ended up having to go to the Infield Care Center. They sent him to the local hospital for further evaluation, and then he left there to be evaluated at a hospital in Charlotte. So I'm glad that he's getting the care that he needs. But J.J. Yaley ended up in 38th due to handling issues that he was having with his car. Everybody else, 36 cars ended up finishing the all 266, most of the laps of this race. So that was pretty cool. All of them were running at the end of the race.
Yeah, it was not the most exciting race. Of course, pit strategy, came in big, but I like the way they ran it. They ran it during the day, then finished off at night, instead of just running it, getting a 1 o'clock start and getting it done, before the sun went down, because, it made the crew chiefs, have to work a little bit harder, as far as what their setups they're going to, use for the night, and changes and stuff like that. So,
yeah. Playoff drivers who finished outside the top 10 were Joey Logano, William Byron, Alex Bowman, and Christopher Bell. Christopher Bell finishing 24th, Bowman in 22nd, William Byron in 18th, and Joey Logano actually finished just outside the top 10 in 11th place. So those are going to be the bottom four, I believe, right? In the point standings?
Yeah, and actually this was supposed to be one of Joey Logano's stronger tracks, coming in. And this was an unpredictable for Chase Elliott. They said he doesn't have the best finishes here, and he has so much issues over here at this track, but yet, he managed to pull off, second place finish.
Yes. Actually, Joey Logano had enough playoff points to keep him in the top eight. It's Kevin Harvick that's below the cut line now.
Kevin Harvick, and now it's Bowman. He just continued to have his. William Byron had an up and down day. Also had an up and down day. At Vegas.
Let's go ahead and cover the rest of the point standings.
So we still got Kyle Larson leading the points. Danny Hamlin in second. Kyle Busch in third. Martin Truex Jr. in fourth. Ryan Blaney in fifth. And Chase Elliott round out the top six of the 12 that are still fighting for that. Actually, Danny Hamlin's already in, so he's not even one of the drivers that has to worry about, you know, the Roval or the Talladega coming up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, he's already punched his ticket.
Just from there, we go down to Joey Logano. Eighth is Brad Keselowski. Ninth is William Byron. 10th is Kevin Harvick. 11th is Alex Bowman. And 12th is Christopher Bell at the bottom of the food chain there.
Yeah, I don't think anybody would have predicted Kevin Harvick being in jeopardy of not making it into the next round. He has 0 wins on the season, only 2 playoff points that are holding him in 10th place. He's going to need a win in one of these next 2 races, either Talladega or the Charlotte Roval.
Yes, and you know, Brad spoke a little bit about it too, but you know, Brad's a pretty good driver when it comes to Talladega. You know, so
that's,
you know,
true.
Brad could, you know, have a good you know, he could have a good race at you know, coming up at Talladega next week.
Yeah, it is going to be interesting because when you look at the top 12 drivers, any one of those 12 drivers could end up winning at Talladega. It tends to be a Ford track, so I would definitely look at the Ford cars going into Talladega this weekend.
Yes, and even Kevin Harvick, you know, could have a breakout, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a breakout race, you know, and pick up a win. You know, it's going to be hard to pick a winner. It's going to be one of those toss-up races, you know.
It is. It is going to be one of those toss-up races. Their next 2 races are Talladega. After Talladega, it's the Charlotte Roval. So you got to look at the drivers that are good on the road courses. And nobody's better lately than Chase Elliott.
Exactly. So this could be Chase's the role could be. I'm sure he has that circled on his calendar. You know, it's just, you know, if something goes bad at Talladega, you know what? I always have you know, the role to look forward to.
Absolutely, absolutely. Kyle Larson has an amazing 60 playoff points with his 6 wins and 15 stage victories. Denny Hamlin has half that a number with 30 playoff points, 10 stage wins, and 2 race wins. Those guys are far and away above everybody else, except for Martin Truex Jr., who actually has the 4 race wins and 5 stage wins for 29 playoff. Ryan Blaney is at 24 playoff points, Kyle Busch at 22. Those playoff points are keeping those guys up in that top group of drivers, though.
Oh yeah, that 60 playoff points, that's amazing. I mean, that's almost unheard of, you know. But he racked them up, you know, when he's picking up his wins. And you know, that's what, you know, like you said, you know, that's what's keeping him alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's been an interesting year, and we'll have to see what happens in these upcoming races at Talladega and the Charlotte Roval. So they will pare down. They're at 12. They'll probably pare down to 8. And then the next round is going to be interesting. We've got the schedule for the Cup Series. Let me see if I can get the Cup Series schedule here. The next round for the Cup Series, I want to kind of cover those races here real quick. For the round of eight, they're going to be racing at Texas Motor Speedway October 17th, Kansas Speedway on the 24th, and then Martinsville. That's going to be the elimination race for the Cup Series as well as the Truck Series. And if I look at the Xfinity Series in their next round, let me see what's going to happen there. Because the Robo, they'll cut down their drivers. Yeah, it's the same thing. So all three series will have their elimination determine who their final four drivers are at Martinsville Speedway. So the Xfinity Series also, Texas, Kansas, and then Martinsville for the round of eight. So keep that in mind for this next round. But they've got to get through Talladega and the Charlotte Roval next.
Exactly. And I'll tell you, it's going to be and then when they get to Phoenix, they have no points. Whoever the highest is going to be a champion. So all those playoff points that Kyle Larson, you know, racked up, you know, to make it into the, you know, if he makes it into the final four, you know, all those points, they're all going to disappear. And it's just going to be whoever the highest finisher is going to be our champion.
Absolutely. So, Sal, we're very happy that you're able to be on the show here with us tonight. I know you're recovering from COVID-19. Are you able to get out to the track at this point, or is that even possible?
No.
Are you in quarantine?
No, I'm not in quarantine anymore. I'm out of quarantine. But my next race won't be until the 23rd, which will be the SRL race at Kern County Raceway, which will be the championship race. So
I'm
taking off. Yeah, I'm taking off the rest of the weeks until that race comes up on the 23rd.
Okay, and then you'll be back at work then.
Yes. I should be back before then, back to work.
Oh, okay. Well, we're so happy that you had your vaccinations and that you unfortunately got COVID-19, but you've been able to recover and get back on track here.
Yeah, it feels good to start to feel good. I mean, I'm still not there, but, you know, I'm getting there.
Yes. Well, thank you for being here. We always appreciate having you on the show, and we'll look forward to next Monday night when we can review the races at Talladega on next Monday night, starting at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time.
Okay, everybody, have a good evening, have a good week, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Okay, Sal. Take care, and we'll talk to you next Monday.
Okay. Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye. Okay, we're coming up at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time, and that means that we're getting ready here to start our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off, and I believe joining me for now is Michael Orzel. Welcome to the show, Mike.
It is me for now. I guess I'm to take that I'm the only person with you for now. So a big hello to everybody.
Well, that is true. You're the only one here for now. I know Jay said he may come on a little bit later. Andy was a TBD. I think he is working but on his way home and hoping to make it before we finish out our Hot Topic Sound Off here tonight. Since you're the only one here, Mike, I'm going to have you kick us off with the first hot topic. Hopefully Jay will come on before we finish that discussion and we can get his thoughts about it.
Well, Jay can't be too far away. I'm bantering back and forth with him right now in our fantasy picks. Apparently, my selection of Clyde William Elliott, second of his name, he said that was more than one driver selected, which I don't think is valid. But suffice it to say, Jay shouldn't be too far behind. As far as kicking off the hot topics, I'm going to open with some good news to follow up on some bad news from yesterday. The bad news, if you'd missed it yesterday on lap 92, Joey Gase and his number 15 Rick Ware Racing Chevrolet had the left rear wheel come off of his car, and he hit the wall extremely hard in turn 1 and 2 yesterday afternoon. They said during the broadcast he had been transported to a local hospital for further evaluation. The team announced today that he has been released from the hospital. He's going to go back to North Carolina for some follow-up stuff in Charlotte, but it sounds like Joey Gase is, if he's not completely back to 100%, he's at least well along the road to recovery. Some great news hearing that Joey Gase is out of the hospital and seems to be doing just fine.
Yeah, I guess there was a parts failure on his car. He totally lost that wheel, and while racing at the speeds that these guys race, that is never a good situation. And we're thankful that Joey Gase is doing much better. Jay is here now, so welcome to the show, Jay.
Thank you, Sharon. What's up, Mike?
Hello, Jay.
Okay, we're talking about Joey Gase, Jay. So any thoughts there on Joey Gase?
Good to hear that he is doing better. Hopefully there are no issues and there is no recovery time. Concerned there a little bit, you mentioned the part failure of what did happen, as that was a horrific wreck. Not that we haven't seen some bad ones here recently, but especially when it comes to a parts failure like that, that it gets looked into to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I agree with you. Knowing that it was a parts failure and having a wheel come off the car at those speeds is extremely dangerous. He's just lucky that it didn't involve other cars on the track and that more people were not hurt. We're very thankful for that. But I hope that his organization takes the time to really explore what did happen there so that never happens again. That was a very bad parts failure and very unfortunate for Joey Gase. I'm sure he's going to be feeling a little sore for quite some time, and I hope that his injuries will allow him to be back on the track at Talladega, where they'll be going even faster. Mike, what are your thoughts there?
Well, this is an interesting thing. You know, normally, and they talked about this during the broadcast, if a wheel comes off of a car, it's a four-race suspension for a crew chief and for the tire changer that was in charge of putting that tire on the car. But in this case, it seems like the tire was properly mounted onto the hub of the race car. It was the hub itself, the part that the tire attaches to on the car that's not supposed to come off. That's what fell apart. And that's what's really concerning to me. We all know Rick Ware Racing is, to put it diplomatically, an underfunded race team. But, guys, if you're going to build them slow, at least build them safe. We saw this a couple times last year with Bubba Wallace in the 43 car, where he was talking about the team couldn't afford to put good parts on the car, and parts failures were costing them even the mediocre finishing positions that they could have. So I get that there's a lot of pressure on these teams to build fast race cars and get them to the racetrack, and the schedule is frantic, especially the cross-country trip to go all the way out to Las Vegas. But this really highlights the necessity where pushing the boundary a little bit too far on parts, especially critical safety parts like wheel hubs, can have devastating consequences, and we're all fortunate that Joey Gase didn't get hurt worse because of this. So hopefully this causes a lot of teams, especially the underfunded teams that tend to reuse parts more than the top teams do, hopefully it causes them to go and take a little bit look a little bit closer at some of these parts and make sure that if they're reusing parts from previous races, that those parts are in good mechanical shape to be able to hold up for another race.
Definitely. Jay, your follow-up?
Yeah, I don't know what the procedure is on that of the safety of parts being used. Like Mike said, either reusing parts, using older parts, maybe some older parts on the newer car. So that is something that maybe needs to be looked at, of some type of evaluation there of not using certain parts older than a certain age, or some other type of inspection, not necessarily at the track, but approval from NASCAR on that. The other thing, though, overall, do look at it, even with that happening and the wreck that happened, the safety of the car itself, especially for the driver cockpit. I know this is one, another one I don't know that we have up on Hot Topics yet. When we talk about the next-gen car, NASCAR has done a great job of improving that and making sure the drivers are safe.
Yes, that is true. But obviously something did go wrong here, and I do think that they need to review that. If you're going to use spare parts, you've got to make sure that those spare parts are reinforced, so that things like this don't happen. And I think that it is worthy of them taking the time to review this to see what could have been done to avoid this from happening. So I hope that they do their due diligence on that and make sure that if they're going to use those spare parts, that they are reinforced to avoid these types of accidents. Mike, your final thoughts?
Well, they, like you said, NASCAR has done a great job of making the cars safer. But you can only, even if you have the driver completely immobilized in there, you can't immobilize internal organs. They, you know, they're going to shift when you have an impact that hard. And if they didn't show it very well on TV because they didn't have very good camera angles, but Getty Images released a few pictures, still pictures today, of the Joey Gase wreck. And that car had all four wheels off the ground as high at least as the top of the safer barrier, at least not, if not a little bit higher than the safer barrier. So a good 4 feet off of the ground was this car just from the impact of hitting that wall that hard. And the scary part is it was very reminiscent of the Dan Weldon crash, where Dan Weldon was killed at Las Vegas a few years ago by having a failure in the left rear, spinning the car around 270 degrees and hitting the wall extremely hard, very similar to the way Joey Gase did. So is it a problem with track design? We've had two wrecks that look very similar. Fortunately, Joey wasn't hurt worse. I don't know that it is or not. I'm not an engineer or don't have any kind of expertise to say for sure that it was. But, you know, that kind of an impact, having the car get airborne from a single impact like that is concerning. And hopefully they're looking at not just the individual parts on the race car, but some of the other factors that caused that 15 car to get airborne with how hard he hit that wall, whether it's the angle of the safer barrier, how it interacts with the track or something like that, if that's also something that could be looked at to prevent the car from getting airborne, or maybe change the angle that the car rebounds off of that safer barrier so it doesn't impart as much force to the driver. I think those are some important things to look at as we continue to move forward to try and make these cars safer for everybody.
Well said, Mike. Okay, so let's go on to the next hot topic. Jay, we'll go ahead and start with you.
Well, we might have to split this one up into two different parts as I see it, but Colleague Racing has announced that Daniel Hemric will be their driver next year for their Xfinity Series team, moving over from Joe Gibbs Racing.
Okay, so Jay kind of alluded to this being two parts. Well, it's two parts for me. First part, not a surprise. The not a surprise part is that Daniel Hemric is not going to be back at Joe Gibbs Racing next year. He's done okay in the car, but you look at how the other cars at JGR have run, especially the 54 car with a slew of drivers in there, and Hemric has been okay at best, but really has, I would say he's lived up to his potential, but his potential has reached its limit, and it wasn't really a surprise for him to be shown the door from Joe Gibbs Racing. The surprise for me was that he was picked up by Colleague and was given another opportunity in some fairly top-tier equipment in the Xfinity Series, even though we're beating the same drum we beat almost every week when we talk about the guy. Daniel Hemric has yet to get to victory lane, and as the season has progressed, it almost feels like he's getting further and further away from it. He was challenging for wins more frequently towards the beginning of the year, and he tends to run up front in the first half or so of the races right now, but then it seems to fade as the race progresses. So I'm not sure what the deal is with that 18 car, whether they've shifted resources somewhere else, knowing Hemric's not going to be back next year. But he definitely didn't – he wasn't producing the momentum that I thought was going to springboard him into another top-tier ride. So I am surprised to see him in a colleague car next year. How he does there – it's tough to say. I don't think colleague cars are as good as Joe Gibbs racing cars, at least not on most tracks. You put him on a speedway, Daytona, Talladega, maybe he's going to be like Justin Haley, where he wins a couple speedway races and everybody thinks he's something special. I don't know. But to be fair, I don't have a whole lot of faith in Daniel Hemric lighting the world on fire at colleague next year.
Okay. I think it's probably a good move for Daniel Hemric. We've talked about Daniel Hemric a few times. I like Daniel Hemric a lot. He's a really stand-up guy and a really good person. He races consistently. He races clean. And I like that about Daniel Hemric. I have no qualms about that. But Daniel Hemric has not won. I am hoping that he is able to get a win with colleague racing, but I have the same concerns that Mike brought up. Colleague racing is starting a new cup team next year. Their resources are going to be splintered a bit, and I think that that could hurt their Xfinity Series program. And I say could. Colleague racing has done really, really well for a new startup team in the Xfinity Series, and I'm hoping that they've got everything in place to do really well in Cup without endangering their Xfinity Series program. And again, I say that with my fingers crossed. I have faith in colleague racing. I think they've done a good job as a startup team. I'm just concerned about the splintering of their resources between Xfinity and Cup. So, Jay, what are your thoughts?
Well, Mike said he doesn't have a lot of faith in him, but he doesn't have faith that Noah Gregson can win races either. So we'll take that with a little bit of salt and some Voodoo Mountain Dew. I think here that the key factor is that Hemric, and I know he gets compared to Matt DiBenedetto, good driver, shows what they can do in top equipment, hasn't gotten a win. But I also don't think that a team has set themselves up to build an organization around the driver, in this case, Daniel Hemric. And I think that's what comes into play here is colleague racing is looking long-term down the road to the future. We know that Justin Haley's running a full-time ride next year at the Cup Series. They're bringing Daniel Hemric into the Xfinity Series. The other team at the Cup level going to be a part-time. Give Daniel Hemric some starts. AJ Allmendinger, I'm sure, is going to get a few. I think Allmendinger has made the case if they asked him to, he would, but going back full-time Cup isn't necessarily what drives him. He wants to work for colleague racing, and I think that's the key is that they are building for the future. Daniel Hemric hasn't been with the same team for more than, I think, 2 years before getting bounced around, and I just think that they see the talent there and have the confidence that if they can get him in there and set the team up around him, build for the future, and he may possibly be their second Cup driver in the years to come. And I think that's a great thing because I do think Daniel Hemric has the talent and should at least have that opportunity. Now, the other half to this equation is Joe Gibbs Racing. We talked about this, I think, almost maybe 2 months ago already, what Joe Gibbs Racing was going to do if they were going to downsize what they were going to do. And I'm not saying it in a bad way of rats abandoning a sinking ship, but Harrison Burton is gone. Daniel Hemric is now gone. They know what's coming. Ty Gibbs is obviously coming. They haven't announced it yet, but it's coming. What they do with a third or maybe fourth team, we'll have to wait and see. We know Kyle Busch says he isn't going to run anymore. If they go back to a red where it talked about that all-star team that they've utilized, if we go back to practice and qualifying for next year, your Cup drivers don't necessarily want to be in as many races. Denny Hamlin, Christopher Bell, or Martin Truex to get track time. Not to say, again, they won't for sponsors or certain situations, but they utilized it this year more to get that track time that they couldn't get at the Cup level. So going to be interesting to what Joe Gibbs does as a final decision with their organization in the Xfinity Series.
Okay, we've got Joe Gibbs in this conversation now. Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, Jay brings up a good point about getting a team built around them. But at the same time, I don't really buy into that too much, especially at the Xfinity Series level. Yes, it's obviously an advantage to have a team built up around you, but I can't really fault the Xfinity Series regulars for a guy like Kyle Busch or Martin Truex or Christopher Bell coming down from the Cup Series and stealing their lunch money. You kind of expect that when a top-level Cup driver comes down to drive top equipment in the Xfinity Series. You expect them to be contenders, if not race-winning favorites every week, and they usually are. The thing that kind of exposes the Xfinity Series a bit is we now have two multi-race winners in the series who don't have a team built around them in the Xfinity Series, and they don't have any previous experience in the big three NASCAR major touring series. Namely, Ty Gibbs is a full-time ARCA driver. He has never run a full-time truck series schedule. I don't know that he even has a single truck series start. Josh Berry also has not run a full-time ARCA schedule, has not run a full-time truck schedule. I think he has one or two starts in the trucks. Both of them have come to the Xfinity Series this year, run extremely well, and both of them have won two races for the case of Josh Berry and three races for Ty Gibbs, and they've been competitive to win more races than that. And they don't have a team built around them, nor do they have significant experience behind them to bring into the series. So the fact that Daniel Hemric has had multiple full-time seasons in top-level equipment in the Xfinity Series, albeit not necessarily built all the way around him, that excuse only goes so far in terms of justifying keeping him around on the potential of what might come in the future when there's guys out there clearly going out there and capitalizing on the few opportunities that they have right now.
Yeah, I think you have to look at what Colleague Racing has done well. And I think that one of the things that I've been impressed with Colleague Racing is their team camaraderie. These drivers really support one another on the track. What I don't really know for next year, and I think it will become apparent, is how many drivers will be part of that Colleague Racing team in the Xfinity Series. But the team experience there is a positive one, and I think that that would be good for Daniel Hemric. Daniel Hemric, I feel like, has kind of been an island unto himself in some of these cases where he has been racing with some of these other organizations. And I haven't seen the same kind of team camaraderie at Joe Gibbs Racing that I have seen at Colleague Racing. Is there team camaraderie? Yes, but there's also a great deal of competitiveness. At Colleague Racing, I really see these guys supporting one another and celebrating with one another when they're successful. And I think that that's something to be looked at as well. So I think everybody's bringing up good points on both sides here. I have the same concerns, but at the same time, I'm not quite where Mike is, but I'm not quite where Jay is either. I'm kind of somewhere in the middle between both of you guys. When it comes to Colleague Racing, I'm willing to look to see what happens in this coming year and what are their announcements that they have forthcoming. So I do have faith in Colleague Racing of what they can maybe do to help Daniel Hemric have a breakout year. Jay?
Yeah, and to bring in another driver comparison of finding that right spot with the right team, whether it be the entire team as an organization, as Sharon talked about, with the right crew chief. I look at Daniel Suarez. When he goes into Trackhouse Racing, a new team, driver that hasn't exactly shown the best of stats as far as the Cup Series, comes in and they didn't get a win, but showed a lot better than we expected as a first-year team. And I think that's the kind of organization that Colleague Racing is as well, that you know, Sharon mentioned it, just the commitment they have to each other, pairing up the right people or however they make it work, that they have shown they can do that. So I think Daniel Hemric is a great fit there. I think he's going to do well. I think Matt DiBenedetto is another one, and we'll bring that up as a separate hot topic, but another driver that just the right combination, You know, it may take a 2 years or 3 years to develop that within the organization. And these drivers don't seem to get it because even though they run good, they aren't getting the victories.
Yeah, think about Martin Truex Jr. He didn't do really well until he got with the right organization. And Joe Gibbs Racing sometimes, too. We've seen drivers leave Joe Gibbs Racing and do better than they did at Joe Gibbs Racing. So, and it's been more than one driver. So we'll see what happens there. No, Andy's not here yet. So, Mike, we'll go to you for the next hot topic.
Sure. Well, Jay brought up one that I had suggested in the comments or in the our chat group. So I'm going to steal one of the ones he brought up. Venturini Racing has proposed they're describing it as a halftime break within NASCAR races, and kind of the general idea is a stoppage in the middle part of the race where the teams will be able to take big swings and adjustments. The media can get driver interviews, stuff like that. But an interesting idea from Venturini. Wonder what everyone's thoughts on that are.
Okay, Jay.
Well, the concept itself, I understand there's some benefits to it. I don't think at the top three level we need to do that. We saw it in the truck series when they started as they got their feet on the ground and before they had full-time truck series crews and everything, that we saw that. I understand it at the lower tier series. Again, it comes down to the cost. A big thing of it is cost. Now, I understand his point of you want to see a great second half of the race, give these teams, you know, that opportunity, 10 solid minutes to work on their car and get it better for the second half run. But there's a reason the Cup Series, the top guys, whether it be crewmen, crew chiefs, drivers, get to that level because they can do it on the fly, make those adjustments during the race, make the car ready to go when it comes off the trailer if they don't get qualifying or practice in. So I don't know that I want to see it come to the top three series. If they were to do it, I'm sure that they would maximize the benefit from it. Like I said, I can see his point to that, as well as then you talk about TV media coverage, just like we do with the stage breaks. They get an interview in with the driver, or they get to talk to these drivers during that halftime break. If they were to do it, they're going to maximize it, and I think some good things could come of it, but I don't think it needs to be done, at least not at the top three level.
Yeah, I have to kind of agree with that. We've got the stage breaks now, and we do get interviews with the drivers during those stage breaks where they talk to them in car and get their thoughts. They talk to the crew chiefs. I agree. This is the premier series, and I think you need to do things that are going to separate them from the Arca Menard series. However, I will say that is a huge adjustment for drivers that are coming from the Arca Menard series or from, you know, the East or the West series to make the pit stop, because they're just not used to those types of pit stops in those series. So I see where he's coming from. I think he's trying to make it less of a transition for the drivers coming from the Arca Menard series, but I don't think it's the right thing to do for NASCAR's premier series. These guys are accustomed to making decisions under the current format. I like the stage breaks. I think it's a good thing for the racing. It's done really good things for the racing in all three of the series. So I'm not in favor of that. But I can see where he's coming from, but I don't think it's going to accomplish exactly what he thinks it's going to accomplish. And I'm a big fan of Venturini Motorsports, but I'm just not a fan of this particular idea. So, Mike?
Yeah, count me in the same group as y'all. I understand the point, but I'm also strongly opposed to the idea. Look, we've already got a competition, at least one competition caution, two stage breaks, and Quinn Houff. That's more than enough stoppages in the race already. We don't need more. And the worst thing that we've got going for the sport right now is in the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series when they're doing race weekends on their own and they do the dead pit stops. And that is a massive just it's a grind on the TV show. They are already doing driver interviews. The teams are already taking big swings at adjustments. And that sounds a whole lot like what Venturini is proposing right now. Is it's going to look a whole lot like those dead pit stops. And that's some of the worst 15 minutes to 20 minutes of television that NASCAR broadcasts right now. And, you know, as a race fan, I tune it out, and maybe I come back to the race, maybe I don't, because it's just there's nothing to it. And, yeah, I get that they want to work on the cars, they want to make them better, but you work on the car and you make it better before you show up to the racetrack. And if you miss it, sorry, man, you missed it. You're going to have to try it again next week. That's just how racing goes. He's basically looking to get a do-over on the car setup, which is just not really the way it goes in racing. Sorry about your luck. And from a fan perspective, I can't see any way that this would be beneficial or entertaining for the fans who are trying to watch a coherent, entertaining show on TV. They do it in SRX somewhat, but it's the break between the different heat races. So, yeah, you've got some downtime where they're getting the cars ready, going from the qualifying heats into the main race. But they don't stop the main race in the middle of the show just to stop it and interview drivers and whatnot. So I don't think that there's any way that would translate well into one of the top series either.
Jay, any follow-up?
Quite be as harsh as Mike there, but there are some valid points there. We hear the fans as a group, Mike obviously being one of them, that talk about that, and that's why they talked about shortening races of the attention span. So, yeah, taking that 10, 15 minutes, you're feeding into that sentiment that, hey, we want to be done. Get it going, be done. So I think there would be a lot of fan lashback about it. I can't say I've heard a lot of what Mike called the dead pit stops, where you don't lose positions on pit road. I am not a fan of it. I know it only happens a couple times a year, so I'm okay with it. I generally am not listening or watching the races live, it seems like. So when I'm watching it, I'm fast-forwarding anyway. But I'm also one that if they show 5 hours of practice, I'm going to watch 5 hours of practice. I'm going to watch, the hour and a half of qualifying. That's just me. And I realize I am in the minority of that. So I think that they'd really have to take a look at that, the fan lashback, as well as then you're talking about the TV package when it comes to that, because we already have the issue of they're breaking up the racing for commercials. I know they've gone to the side-by-side. That appeased some of it, but to have another downtime like that certainly can cause some issues. And I don't know that the benefit of it, like Venturini's looking for, of, hey, we're going to have all top-notch cars then in the second half because they've had this window to work on it. You know, they've had how many weeks prior to, like Mike said, show up to the track with a good car, and they have how many weeks prior to work on it. What makes you think they're going to get it done in 10, 15 minutes?
Exactly. I don't really have anything to add, so I'll move on to Mike's final comments here on this topic.
I think we've covered it pretty well. There's really not a whole lot to beat around. I really don't think this idea is going to go anywhere. Yeah, I don't think Venturini has that much influence or pull within NASCAR to make it happen. But then again, the choose rule came about more or less just because Austin Dillon suggested it on Twitter and everyone liked it. And that's worked out all right. So hopefully this doesn't end up like the choose rule where, you know, the good idea fairy lands on somebody's shoulder and it grows legs and runs from there. The choose rule, that turned out to be pretty decent. Halftime, let's leave that for the ball sports.
Okay. Jay, you're up for the next hot topic.
Well, as Mike put it up on the team chat, is Kevin Harvick playing head games with Chase Elliott? We know what happened between them. Harvick seems to thrive on that of getting in another driver's head. So is this deal between Chase Elliott and Kevin Harvick done? And how hard is Harvick pushing it?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. Mike, your thoughts?
I don't know. Obviously, there was some pretty serious beef between the two of them at Bristol and after the race. Whether that's going to carry over, obviously, those two are smart enough and mature enough. They didn't wreck each other at Las Vegas. You're going too fast. Ask Joey Gates. They're probably not going to wreck each other at Talladega. Again, going too fast, although Kevin Harvick does have a history of wrecking a lot of cars at Talladega all at once. So I guess I couldn't put it completely past them, but I really don't think either one of them is going to intentionally wreck the other one at Las Vegas. As far as the rest of the races are concerned, well, there's really not a great opportunity because the way the season's been going so far, Harvick's not going to have a chance at it. We've got the Charlotte Roval coming up, which is a slower track. You could put the bumper to somebody, but I think unless something unforeseen happens, the only time that Elliott's going to be seen by Harvick is when Elliott is going from inevitably the back of the field where they tend to put themselves from time to time all the way to the front while Harvick is stuck somewhere around 15th. Same thing for Martinsville. Elliott will be up in the front. Harvick will be in the back. I really don't think there's going to be a chance of the two interacting with each other at Martinsville either. So maybe Phoenix, if it comes down to that. Elliott made sure that Harvick didn't win at Bristol. Maybe Harvick does take a shot at making sure Elliott doesn't win at Phoenix.
Okay, I will say I know Harvick to be a promoter, and he is done this year after year after year. He typically comes up with some way of generating interest in what's going on, and we all know that the rivalry and when there's a discussion on the track like they had last week, people take note of it and they want to tune in and find out what's going to happen next. Harvick this week said that talking to Elliott was like talking to his five-year-old. So I do get the feeling that he is playing a little bit of head games with Chase Elliott. I don't know that Chase Elliott's going to go for it. I think he's mature enough that he can look the other way and not listen to that kind of stuff. But I think it's more for promotion purposes than anything else to keep people engaged in the playoffs. So we'll have to see what Harvick does at Talladega and at Martinsville. It has not been his year so far. He hasn't had a whole lot of attention, so this is one way of drawing attention to him and to what's going on. Chase Elliott is the defending champion, so if he's going to get into anybody's head, that's the head that he wants to get into. I really don't think it's going to work. I think Harvick's track record speaks for a promoter, and he's doing what he does. He's promoting. Jay?
Well, and it might be motivation, self-motivation and team motivation for his team. We've seen that in the past where it talked about him calling out his pit crew during a championship run and races. So self-motivation, but also I think he obviously, I would say obviously didn't feel satisfied with what was said in the holler once they moved inside, still having that disagreement of what happened. And I thought, again, I found it funny. It definitely caught my attention. You referenced him saying it was like talking to a seven-year-old or Keelan, his son Keelan. So, you know, like you said, it draws that interest to it. We saw him race side by side there at Las Vegas, and I don't know if they ever found any audio that Harvick was warned that he was coming. They ran close. Now, like you said, they're both smart enough to know Las Vegas, Talladega isn't the place to do something intentionally. Okay, throw that in there. When we get to the Roval, Martinsville. Now, those are tracks that something can happen real easily. Even if one is in the front, one's in the back, I don't know that I necessarily agree with that assessment by Mike, but there's still opportunities. I mean, Chase obviously made an opportunity at Bristol, and he was laps down. You know, we've seen that in the past. I think back to Matt Kenseth and Joey Logano. I don't think it'll be anything that obvious. The one key thing I think that all the broadcasters on Race Hub talked about, as long as they are currently both in the playoffs, I don't think either one of them does anything that's going to create an enemy and put their championship hopes at risk. If in this next round, and I'll go with Harvick being at the bottom, that he gets knocked out, I think that third round going for the final four, you may see him do a lot to maybe not allow Chase Elliott the opportunity, whether it be an intentional takeout or a taking his line as Elliott did at Bristol, if you take that road. But I think as long as they are both in the championship hunt, they don't want to make that enemy. They're going to try and set it aside. And maybe it'll boil into next year too early on. Don't know. But we'll have to see whether or not they still feel there's a score to be settled.
Okay. Mike, well, any follow-up?
Yeah, Sharon, you're 100% right. There's obviously at least a certain degree, if not an overwhelming degree, of marketing and salesmanship going on here. This is the NASCAR playoffs. NASCAR spent decades trying to make this into a big deal, bigger than just regular races that happen throughout the year. And part of that is building the stories and the drama that's going to get people to watch and tune in. Harvick's been around this business long enough to understand how that goes, especially not just from the driver's standpoint. He's also done the team owner thing, and he's also done the media thing. So he's got a whole wide range of experience to understand how that works. So, yeah, absolutely, there's a large amount of promotion going on there. Dale Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon are another good pair that were they really worked into playing up the rivalry that they had between the two of them. And they did have some heated time on the racetrack, although it was a very respectful kind of rivalry. But they definitely did play up the on-track rivalry between the two of them. And if you watch Fox's special regarding the rivalry between the two of them, you find out that, yeah, they knew what they were doing in terms of promoting and selling merchandise and getting people to watch races and show up to races. So, yeah, the promotion end of it is extremely important, and I think Harvick is well aware of it. I'm sure Elliott is as well. So, yeah, you're 100% right that there's that angle on there. The other thing I think is in play here, though, is I think Kevin Harvick is kind of feeling a little bit of march of time here. For the past few years, we've been talking about, hey, one of these young guys who are coming up into the sport now, you Chase Elliott, Blaney, Larson, Logano was kind of on the leading edge of that, but I don't really count him in that same group as Elliott, Blaney, Larson, et cetera. These young guys who came into the series in the middle of the decade but really haven't come into their own until really the past 2 years or so. And I think that's really happened, especially this year, where Chase Elliott wins the championship last year. Kyle Larson has just dominated the series this year. And the previous generation of drivers, your Kevin Harvick, your Martin Truex, maybe even a little bit Kyle Busch, they kind of feel that their best years are behind them. Maybe they got a couple more ahead of them, but they certainly got far more years behind them. And every driver talks about you don't know when that last win is going to come. And with as rough of the years Kevin Harvick has had this year, I can't help but feel like maybe he's got a little bit of now or never feeling. And if he lets this slip away against a guy like Chase Elliott or anyone else for that matter, his opportunity to try it again next year or the year after that, those are getting pretty limited. So that's got to be a little bit of a driver behind Kevin Harvick as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that Kevin Harvick did feel that race at Bristol was his best chance to get a victory and kind of build some momentum for his team going into the remainder of the playoffs. And that got foiled by Chase Elliott. So it gave him a reason to pick a fight with Chase Elliott and have that conversation. But the fact that he continued with the comments this week tells me that he's kind of prolonging it a little bit for promotion purposes, just by the fact of what he is saying. But then also, I also agree with Jay that if he's going to do something, these are not the races to do it. Talladega may be an opportunity, but Martinsville is certainly a good opportunity if he's that serious about it that he wants to keep Chase Elliott from getting a second championship. He might be, you never know, there might be some jealousy here too that Chase Elliott won a championship and possibly on his way to a second championship. Kevin Harvick just might not want him to have that happen. So he may do what he needs to do to keep him from moving on. So we have to wait and see how that plays out. But I think more than anything, I think it's promotion purposes. Jay?
Yeah, like I said, you've said it before. We've seen this back even when he went toe-to-toe with Denny Hamlin, a couple others, really put that pressure on mentally as far as getting in their head, playing those mind games. We know that he is capable of that and does like to do it. So maybe he really does feel his team is in position, and that's why he's starting. Bristol being one race that he had really the shot at winning. I don't know that we've seen that a whole lot this year, that he's got that confidence riding high and feels he's got a shot to get into the next round and make a run for the championship. So that's why he's starting it, or at least keeping it alive at this point. And like you said, you're right. He does a lot as far as the promotion. He knows that side of it as well from all aspects, team owner, driver, sponsors. He does a great job with that. So several benefits to it, and we'll see if it plays out down the road.
Okay. Let me see. I got to see if Andy has shown up, and I don't see him on right now. So, Mike, we'll go to you for the next topic.
All right. So Denny Hamlin went the entire regular season without a win. He's now won two of the previous four races. Is this momentum on Denny Hamlin's side finally turning the corner, and does he have a chance of getting it done this year?
Okay, Mike. Jay?
Oh, he clearly has a shot. We had him as a early on favorite with how well he was running. We did see the leg, and they self-admitted that. They kind of went through a stretch through the summer of maybe not as on top. But since the playoffs have started, right back to that form. Top five finishes, two victories. Picking up the first victory in every round has got to be such a great feeling. So he's building those bonus points, too, as far as if he needs to carry him in through the third round. I think he very much has to be considered a contender. And I know they've already started now talking about comparing it to the Tony Stewart situation against Carl Edwards. Said he wasn't worthy to be there and come out and win half of the races. Well, I don't know that Hamlin ever said, well, we're not worthy to be here. They had kind of hit that lull. But Sharon's one that said we might see that out of Harvick. I think we're seeing it out of Denny Hamlin. It didn't get overly concerned or fall apart during the summer, just had a little bit of a lull where they weren't quite on top. But they came out in the playoffs. They said, hey, we're here to play.
Yeah, I agree. I think that I did think it was going to be Harvick. It turns out that Hamlin's won two of those races so far, and there's certainly enough races he could win three more and do what Tony Stewart did a few years back. I do see a little bit of emotional maturity from Denny Hamlin that I have not seen in previous years, but I've also seen him slip back a couple of times that make me question whether or not he's actually there or not yet. That's yet to be seen. If he can keep his head to the grindstone and not get distracted with some of these other things that are going on that kind of take him off track, then, yeah, I think he could be on his way to winning a championship. But he's got some tough competition to get through if he's going to make that happen. And he's going to need to do what Tony Stewart did a couple years ago if he's going to make that happen. But that emotional maturity is going to be the key to it for Denny Hamlin. I've seen him fall apart from an emotional perspective that has ruined his at winning a championship in the past. The question is, can he hold it all together and keep that emotional maturity throughout the remainder of the playoffs to go after that championship? Or, you know, he could end up being a Mark Martin, too, that is a great driver but never wins that championship. We'll have to see how it plays out and what the rest of the story tells us. Mike?
Yeah, I think Denny Hamlin has kind of been under the radar this year. it's easy to forget, since he didn't win any races, that he led the regular season points all the way from the week after the Daytona 500 all the way until 2 weeks before the end of the regular season, when Kyle Larson just barely squeaked by him to steal that regular season championship. So Denny Hamlin did have a consistent year, but it was just a very quiet year, at least from a Denny Hamlin standpoint. And contrast that against last year, where Denny seemed like he peaked early last year. He won, I think, 7 races prior to going into the playoffs, and then won 1 more in the playoffs. And I think he built up all that momentum, and I know it's not like a bank account, but it feels like he used up that momentum in the regular season and was kind of spent by the time they got to the playoffs. Versus this year, it feels like they're peaking now. And we've talked about it before with other drivers, where our drivers peaking too early, and we talk about it from various team standpoints throughout the year. I really think that Denny Hamlin and that 11 team is really starting to peak at the right time, and that should make everybody nervous. Now, I don't want to speak too soon. If there's one thing that Denny Hamlin has been very consistent about through his career, it's been snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. So don't start writing his name on the trophy yet. But in terms of Denny Hamlin having a chance at winning his first championship, I really think the momentum is on his side. Yes, we've got 6 more races to go, so there's a lot of ground to cover here, literally and figuratively speaking. But from a momentum standpoint, from a team coherence standpoint, from, like you said, Sharon, emotional maturity standpoint, I think all signs are pointing to Denny Hamlin probably having the best chance of winning a championship this year than he has his entire career.
Okay. Jay, your follow-up?
Well, I really would have thought last year, being that he did have all the victories he did, would have been it. Like you said, maybe he did peak a little early, and you certainly can't write his name on the trophy. We know that for many, many years you can't be doing that until that race is over and the championship four have it out. Because Kyle Larson's one of them that's going to have something to say about that. You want to talk about maturity, I think we've seen that from Kyle. Races, and Mike, I know you're one of them, and you've said it, has a bad car, doesn't make it worse by running into the wall, overdriving it, takes where whatever finish it is that they're going to finish and taking it. So, and they haven't had a peak. They had a little bit of a hot streak there. But as a whole, they've been consistently the top team all year, right behind Denny Hamlin to start the season. And they never really had the waver or fall off like we saw with Hamlin. Now, that's what makes it interesting going in through these playoffs. We still have Kyle Larson here battling. I know he had an off week there at Vegas. And again, you can't even say an off week. It was pit strategy, the way it played out. That race played out, it kind of looks like it. But he had one of the faster dominant cars, and I think we're going to see that throughout the rest of the playoffs. So I think those two are the two we can pencil in to the final championship four, but I wouldn't press too hard with that pencil either.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that these championships are not easy to win. It takes an enormous amount of focus. It takes an enormous amount of stamina, if you will, in order to win these championships. And that's why this is the premier series. Denny Hamlin is certainly on the right course right now, but the question remains, and we've seen it happen to several sub drivers. You know, a lot of people were talking about Ryan Blaney a few weeks ago. And, you know, Kyle Larson's been on a hot streak, and, you know, he had a chance to win and made a bad call on pit strategy from the team. So there's a lot of things that can still play out here that could falter that team and that organization. So I don't want to get hopes up too high. He certainly has momentum on his side right now. If he can keep that momentum going, that's the sign of a champion. We've talked about championship teams know how to make mistakes, overcome those mistakes, and still go after that victory. And that's what we need to see from Denny Hamlin if he's going to go after a victory this year. But that's what we need to see from any of the teams that are competing for the championship this year. Can they go the long haul and overcome adversity, overcome mistakes in order to come out on the winning side of things when it's all said and done. And that's what we're looking for from our champion again this year. So we'll have to wait and see if it happens. Mike, your follow-up.
Yeah, I've definitely got to say Denny Hamlin has been the biggest surprise of the playoffs so far this year. I didn't expect him to do poorly, but I certainly didn't expect him to do as well as he has. He's definitely I think I had him going out at the end of this round. I'm not looking at it right now to be sure, but I think I had him going out at the end of this round, if not next round. So I didn't expect an early exit from him, but I also didn't expect him to be as strong of a contender as he's been this year. Everyone's already been talking about Kyle Larson. He's been holding his own very well in the playoffs. There's no reason to think Kyle Larson is not going to continue to be a very strong threat for the championship. The thing that Kyle Larson has going for him that Denny Hamlin doesn't, but is quickly fixing, is playoff points. Kyle Larson has almost an entire race mm-hmm. worth of playoff points where Kyle Larson could finish dead last at Talladega this week like he did in the spring, finish dead last and still not really be in, I wouldn't say he's going to be in a comfortable position, but he's not going to be in severe danger of elimination because of all those playoff points he has. Denny Hamlin, on the other hand, if he had not won yesterday, he doesn't have that bank of playoff points where he can afford to have a really bad race and still recover from it, especially as you get it tighter and tighter into the round of 12 to 8 down to the championship 4. It becomes harder and harder to have that bad race and still recover without that big bank of playoff points like Kyle Larson has. So that's probably Denny Hamlin's biggest weakness, even now with 2 wins in the playoffs, is his relative lack of playoff points versus some of the competition. The performance has been there, but the safety net is still not there, at least not to the extent of some of the other drivers out there. As far as Final Four goes, I would say Denny Hamlin, again, don't start writing anything too firmly in pencil. Kyle Larson, I'm not going to say a sure thing, but it's as sure of a thing as we can have these days. I would say Kyle Larson is probably a sure thing for the championship four, if for no other reason than that giant bank of playoff points he has. Denny Hamlin looking very strong, obviously already through to the next round. He's got some good tracks in that second to last round there between Texas, Kansas, and Martinsville. Not necessarily all the best tracks for Denny, but Martinsville he tends to run very well at most years. And then Phoenix, I don't know, we'll see. The other one I would say, Chase Elliott, is once again doing fairly well in the playoffs. Yes, he had a tire failure at Darlington, and he had the issue with Kevin Harvick at Bristol, but both times the car was competitive, running up front, potentially could win, obviously finished second last night. I would say Chase Elliott and the 9 team are putting together a very strong effort in the defense of their championship, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the championship four again. But beyond that, there's 3 out of the 4. I would say that fourth slot is wide open right now and very difficult to predict who might end up in that fourth slot.
Okay. Jay, let's go to you for the next hot topic.
All right. Well, I was looking through. I don't know that that we have another one on the board. Yeah, we covered those 3, so I don't know if we have another one we want to cover here yet tonight or not.
Okay.
Mike, you got any others?
The one of the ones I was kind of thinking about was reference the big truck series wreck that we had this past Friday. I know teams tend to run one spotter at oval tracks and multiple spotters at road courses. Is it a good idea potentially for NASCAR to mandate more than one spotter at all tracks, or at least all tracks over a certain length? Because I think a big issue with Sheldon Creed hitting Chandler Smith as hard as he did is Creed couldn't see through the wreck, and his spotter on the top of the front stretch press box couldn't see through the infield structures and whatever else was in his line of sight. So should NASCAR mandate a second spotter in light of the big wreck that we had this weekend?
Okay, let me take a moment here to welcome Andy to the show. And Andy, I think you heard what the hot topic is, so I'll let you chime in next.
Well, I'm only an hour late, but better late than never. So thankfully I was able to call in just in time. But yeah, I did hear the question there. And you know, it's not really something I've thought of, but it kind of would make sense. It's just a question of would the teams be willing to pay for a second spotter? you know, on these ovals where they've been doing it with one spotter this entire time. The only thing you can say about that wreck, I know Mike and I were talking about it as it happened, was it definitely was a visibility problem. Obviously, Sheldon wasn't going to pile in there if he thought he was going to hit the 18 truck, but ultimately he did. Ultimately, the spotter gave him the best information he possibly could, which unfortunately still led to a very massive crash down the back straightaway. I don't know. That could be something you see down the road. You know, should they do it or should they not? I think any time that something like this happens that, you know, creates a safety issue possibly moving forward, then yeah, you might say that it's a good idea. So, you know, if NASCAR were to look at it and say, man, we really need two spotters because this is a safety hazard, sure. But, you know, I don't know. I think they've been doing it with one spotter for so long that, you know, ultimately wrecks like this happened once in a great while where it was a spotter / visibility problem. Certainly at the road courses, we see multiple spotters because of visibility issues, you know, for the whole course. Generally speaking, with these ovals, if you're high enough, you can see most of, if not all, of the racetrack. I think in this particular instance, it was nighttime, and it was just hard to see back there. But, you know, from a safety standpoint, would it make sense? Sure. From a logistical standpoint, would the teams be willing to do it? From, you know, a financial standpoint, probably not, but you never know.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts? Oh, before you go, Jay, let me go ahead and do my announcement. We're coming up to 10:30 p.m. Eastern time, and we go off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. However, we do continue recording the rest of our conversation as part of our bonus overtime material on the podcast. So if you're a new listener tuning in for the first time, we make this announcement time to let you know there is a way for you to hear the rest of the conversation. And that is, I go out on Twitter when we finish up our broadcast here. When we finish up our conversation here, I go out on Twitter with a link for the podcast. And the podcast is available via that link or at fanforracing.com. And all you have to do is fast forward the player to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. Again, that's bonus overtime material that you're tuning into. So, again, new listeners, we don't want you to be caught off guard or not know how you can hear the rest of that conversation. So that's why we take the time out at this point to let you know. So with that, Jay, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
This is one of those situations, the wreck, the way it happened. I don't know that there is a fixed action to stop it. When you heard Sheldon Creed talking about it, he said the concern he had with was the car next to him, and that's what he was watching, sped up to get away from him, and yeah, there was a truck there. So I think it's just one of those, you know, one-time things of that situation, the way it developed. My thing with the safety aspect of it, by putting another person on the radio, is now a matter of how do you determine who sees it first, whose side of the track is it on, or whatever. When you talk about having multiple spotters at a road course, they have their section. When the car is in their section, they're the one responsible for it, okay? So it puts it in a tough position. If you were to have a spotter, say, on both sides of the track, it's on their side of the track, but we don't know then the smoke might be in front of that spotter. The one on the other side might have the better view, but if it's not in his section, he not say anything because he thinks it's in the other guy's territory. Then, or if they both try to talk at the same time, you get a garbled message, you don't hear anything. So I don't know that a second spotter would be the answer to even attempt to fix this. Like I said, I think it was one of those rare, just it happened, you know. The fact that he was throttling up made it even worse as he was trying to, again, get away from what he thought was the threat, thought he had a clear lane, turned out not to be.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Jay, but I don't think this is an isolated incident. I think we've seen several incidents this season across all three series where I felt like it was a spotter issue not giving the information, either a spotter issue not giving the information or the driver not heeding the information that they've been given and causing incidents on the track that I think could have been avoided. And so I don't know if another spotter is the answer, but I do think that these spotters need to sit down with their teams and figure out what went wrong in those situations. And there have been multiple situations this year across all three series. I think they need to sit down and figure out what needs to change in the information that they're providing so that these, it seems like isolated incidences don't happen again in the future. But, you know, we've said it before. First time's an accident. Second time's coincidence. Third time, it's starting to become a habit. And the fact that we've seen those not exactly the same as what happened in the truck series, but similar situations where I feel like where was the spotter with the information to the driver that caused that accident. I think we've had multiple situations this season, and I think that that has to be addressed. They have to come to an agreement between the driver and the spotter on not losing their focus, heeding the information that's been given. Whatever the issue is, they need to address that. And I think that there is an issue with spotter communication from one direction or another that needs to be explored and addressed so that these unnecessary incidents don't happen repeatedly, causing accidents unnecessarily. So, Mike, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, y'all bring up some really good points and some varied good points on that one. Andy, for example, with the logistics, probably not a big deal for the Cup Series. They'll just write another check and you know, what's another couple million to a Cup Series team? But then you start talking about the, especially down in the Truck Series, and you get out of the top 10 in the Truck Series, and you're talking about teams that maybe they got half a dozen full-time employees there, so where are they going to source a second spotter from? I don't know. I can't really force them to do it. I'm not the guy writing the check. So it's really hard to expect those teams to do it. Xfinity Series in a little bit similar boat. Yeah, they got a little bit deeper pockets there, but again, you get to the back half of the Xfinity Series field, and yeah, you got shoestring budget teams there again who probably couldn't afford another spotter on the payroll. So, yeah, it's difficult, but then Sharon, you bring up a good point as well. Is the Sheldon Creed incident was it could have been a whole lot worse than it was. It wasn't great, but it could have been a whole lot worse. And you know, how many more of those incidents do we need to see before we finally say, hey, we got to do something about this? And I'm not a big fan of doing something for the sake of doing something, but at the same time, we should have people taking a look at and see what can we do here that will be constructive and hopefully help alleviate the danger here. Yeah, Sheldon Creed ended up hitting Chandler Smith really hard in the left rear quarter panel. If he had been a couple feet further forward on the truck, he would have hit Chandler Smith square in the driver's side door at not necessarily full race speed, but probably about 75-80% race speed straight into the driver's side door of Chandler Smith's truck. So fortunately, that accident didn't go as bad as it could have, but how many more chances do we need to take before we start going down that road of figuring out what we could potentially do to alleviate that problem?
Okay, Andy, your follow-up?
Yeah, you know, so in this instance, like Mike just said, is, you know, if they could, I don't know if it's NASCAR or the team or whoever, but sit down and review the incident, and maybe they could identify areas where the visibility was reduced and maybe improve that. Maybe they help make the backstretch visibility improved, you know, lighting or obstacle, whatever the case may be. But maybe that's what you focus on to try to make it easier for the spotter to help their driver navigate around any on-track incidents. That's probably where I'd start, you know, if I were to go about it and go from there. I think any time there's an accident or incident like this, you can always learn something from it. and apply things learned from that moving forward. And, you know, in this case, it sounds like a visibility issue. So let's find out what the visibility restrictions were and try to improve upon that.
Okay, Jay.
This is going to sound really odd because by no means am I not in favor of improving safety and preventing accidents like this from happening, but I really don't see where you're going to be able to do anything that would have changed that. There was another driver, and I can't think of who it was, that got pinched up against the wall, said that his spotter told him to go low. He's driving the truck, made that instinct call to go high, said it didn't work. And he said the next time he may listen to his spotter, and that not work too. So, you know, it's one of those, I don't know that you can necessarily eliminate all of it. And as you guys were talking, in my head, I was like, well, maybe we should do something with the tires so that they don't smoke as much when you lock them up, you know, because that would reduce the smoke, which is what caused the visibility issue. I mean, yes, I am all about safety and doing things to improve it. And like I said, I see issues with the dual spotter on a regular mile and a half track, so I don't know that that's it. I really believe this is one of those that just happened the way it did. I mean, like I said, Sheldon Creed said it, you know, he by no means was trying to run. I saw some Twitter issues with that of him speeding while under the caution. Well, if the wreck is next to you and you're trying to get away from it, you know, that's your instinct. Okay, there's cars spinning alongside me, I'm going to drive away from it. Same as you do with a deer when you're out on the highway. You know, I'm trying to drive away from it, and somehow or another, you still hit it. I mean, there's just – and you're talking about minimal reaction time. So I'm all for exploring and discussing things that may be able to improve it and prevent it. I don't know that we've come across one or if there is one to actually eliminate it or even reduce it.
Yeah, you're right. The reaction time is sometimes very minimal for them to have a reaction time. But I think there have been enough situations. You just mentioned where the guy said, the guy told me to go, the spotter told me to go low, I went high. Yeah, maybe he would have still hit it if he'd gone low, but there's been enough incidents this year that I think it's worthy to take note of it. Because Joey DeGase, and his situation, that was a very, very hard hit that he took that could have really hurt him very badly. Mike brought up that he came very close to making it worse with Chandler Smith. I think there's been enough of these incidents that these guys need to kind of take note of it. And if there's anything at all possible that they can do differently, that these guys do it. Because we don't want to wait for a really something horrific to happen to have those conversations. Now's the time to have those conversations. And, yes, there's going to be some cases where the reaction time isn't enough or whatever. But if you can save one situation from being a horrific accident, it's worth taking that time, in my way of thinking. So, Mike, you're up next.
Like I said before, I don't want to advocate for some sort of a knee-jerk reaction, doing something for the sake of doing something. If we can intelligently look at the situation and find some improvements to be had, that'd be great. Andy brought up a good point about visibility. I haven't been to all the racetracks. I haven't been to Las Vegas, but a lot of the racetracks that I've been to, they've got a lot of obstructions in the infield, whether they be the big screen TVs or multi-layer like fan garage experiences or grandstands or just sheer distance at places like Daytona or Talladega. Figure out some way to improve spotters' visibility down in those hard to see areas, namely the lower part of the backstretch on a lot of these racetracks. Maybe a fixed camera that gives the spotters who are up on the roof a view of the backstretch, and the spotters can see that screen in addition to what they're seeing with their own eyes out off the top of the spotter stand. I don't know. just something along those lines to help get a little bit more visibility for the spotters and a little bit more information to the drivers. Jay's right. There is a certain degree of, well, that's just going to happen. It's the nature of racing. And I completely agree with him. I don't think that it's remotely possible to make those kind of wrecks completely disappear. But at the same time, I agree with Sharon where if we can try and take steps to mitigate that risk and hopefully keep somebody out of the hospital, I'm all for that too.
Okay. Andy. You have not been able to bring up a hot topic here tonight. Was there a hot topic that you wanted to make sure we discussed tonight?
Well, truthfully, not knowing where we are with previous hot topics, I'm just going to let the others go because I don't know what we have or have not discussed, so it's probably easier to just go with what hasn't been discussed already, and I'll just go from there.
Okay. Well, even if it's a topic that we've already discussed, we'd sure like to get your point of view. So is there a hot topic that you want to give your point of view on?
Well, I guess one of them was news announced over the weekend, Daniel Hemric going to colleague racing for 2022. I'm glad that he, was able to find a competitive ride for next year. I'm not sure why his time at Joe Gibbs Racing was a one-and-done type season. Certainly he's driven for some really good teams in the sport and just hasn't been able to find victory lane yet. Maybe colleague racing's that right fit, I'm not sure, but certainly glad for him that he was able to find a new home for 2022 and hopefully it's the right situation for him. Good guy, someone that genuinely seems like one of the good guys to pull for in the sport, and again, not quite sure what happened with JGR, but, good scenario for him for 2022. So just wanted to talk about that. And then let me just take a look real quick at some of these other hot topics, because I know we had quite a few of them that were brought up on the page. So let me just take a look at that.
While you're doing that, let me see if anybody else wants to comment to what Andy has said there, because that is one of the topics that we talked about.
Well, I just say Andy said he didn't understand the one and done at Joe Gibbs Racing. I don't know when he signed if it was necessarily that intent, but with what we've seen out of Ty Gibbs, him coming along and the possibility being discussed of them reducing the cars that they have in the Xfinity Series, I think is what kind of led to that. And I think that too of Harrison Burton also seeing the writing on the wall, not that, and I said earlier, rats abandoning a sinking ship, not that Joe Gibbs Racing is going in a bad direction, but they are limited. Same as we have at the Cup Series. There's no long-term future down the road when you only have a couple at the Cup Series level. So I think that's part of it too, of the looking for that opportunity all the way to Cup with the same organization.
Okay. Mike, did you have any comments you wanted to add?
No, Andy pretty well covered it on top of what we already discussed previously in the show. So yeah, we'll see how it plays out. I'm sure this isn't the last we're going to talk about it. That's for sure.
Okay. Andy, you had something else you wanted to talk about there. What was that?
Yeah, so I'll just briefly touch on a couple of the other ones that I've seen here in our Hot Topics list. Obviously, the Joey Gase wreck, I didn't see it happen live. I must have been out of the room or something when that happened, but obviously a pretty big wreck there with a parts failure at the left rear. So certainly glad he's okay. I did go to the hospital but was quickly released. Thankfully, so that was a pretty big crash. I actually saw some better pictures and shots of it today, and it was a lot worse than I think I thought it was to begin with. So glad he's okay. Hopefully they can figure out what caused the parts failure, because the whole left rear came off the car, which really should not happen. So hopefully they can address that and not have that happen moving forward. And then this is probably one of the fun ones you guys talked about, but the head games between Harvick and Chase Elliott. I thought it was interesting to me that Harvick continued to discuss the matter this week. I thought perhaps the discussion behind closed doors in the hall or last weekend was going to put it to rest, because I feel like for the case of both of these drivers, putting an on-track incident like that behind them so that they can focus on going deep into the playoffs is probably more important. Harvick being the veteran, it's kind of ironic that he called Chase Elliott a 9-year-old, but he's the one that's still talking about it and still complaining about it. So kind of ironic, in my opinion. I think, honestly, the both of them ought to put it behind them so they can focus on moving forward. But unfortunately, based on the current playoff standings, Harvick's probably going to be eliminated after this round. Chase Elliott's probably going to go at least to the round of eight, if not the final four. And I'm afraid Harvick is probably going to make life difficult for Elliott moving forward. So they better find a way to figure it out, because it could be problematic down the road.
Okay, I'll comment on that one. What I brought up is that I think Harvick is a born promoter, and he's done this kind of thing before, where he picks a beef, if you will, with a driver during the playoffs to kind of create attention and get people talking. And that's what I think he's doing with bringing it up again this week. But you bring up some good points. It's interesting. It is interesting that he calls Chase Elliott a 9-year-old, and then he's the one that's still talking about it. But I think he wants to keep that going. But I also think that Harvick felt like Bristol was his best chance to get a victory and kind of get some momentum going for his team, and that was taken away from him by Chase Elliott. I think that Harvick's going to probably do whatever he can do to make sure that Chase Elliott does not make it into the playoffs this year to win a back-to-back championship. So I don't think this is over. I think it's going to probably continue, and I think Martinsville is where we're going to have to watch Harvick and the Chase Elliott thing continue to play out. If not at Talladega, then Martinsville for sure. Any other follow-ups to what Andy had to say that anybody wants to bring up? Mike?
No. Okay,
or
go
Jay?
Ahead.
Oh, well, I've really got nothing to add on there. I mean, I could take a swipe at Kevin Harvick being in the twilight of his career, something old guy, but I'll leave that be, and we'll see how it plays out on the racetrack.
Okay.
I think Andy brought up a good point, the whole 9-year-old thing, but yet, like you said, he's the one that's continuing to bring it on. So, yeah, that was kind of funny, Andy.
Well, it's true, and, I think, honestly, Elliott's probably going to get the better of him as far as the playoffs go anyway, just based on pure performance alone. And we'll just see what the on-track results say. But, yeah, Martinsville could be interesting later this year, that's for sure.
Okay. Anything else that anybody wants to talk about before we close out our show here tonight? Okay, with that, we'll go ahead and do our roundtable conversation then. And Mike, we'll start with you.
That's going to be Mike_Orzel on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. I wasn't going to do it. I was thinking about it, but I finally got talked into it by somebody. You might hear from him in just a minute. I'm going to Talladega this weekend. I'm going to be at the Cup Series race up in the grandstands this Sunday at Talladega Super Speedway. Can't wait. It's going to be a blast.
I'm sure it will be. Jay?
I'm trying to decide if he was pointing the finger at me there. I don't remember telling him he had to go to Talladega, but I feel like he was pointing the finger at me there.
Jay, there's only
don't
one finger I would ever point at you.
Okay, I saw that at the track this weekend. It wasn't at me, but we had a couple unhappies. You follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, MoparMJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I know we got a little bit of time here, so for the rest of my roundtable, I'll give you an update. I know we didn't get to it to start the show. Yeah, our fantasy points. Oh, Mike's leading the truck points. Maybe I don't want to do this. No, I'm just kidding. Mike has taken
like
over the points lead in the truck series, 97-96 over Sharon. I'm at 89, Sam at 86, Andy 85, Tommy 70, Owen 67, James 54. I believe by my calculations on that one, James is not mathematically eliminated, but he's got to get every point, and the leader every week has to get the lowest point. He's within a couple of points of being actually eliminated. Xfinity, Andy, and I are tied at 118 now, as Andy had a big weekend there. Mike and Sam are tied at 103, 15 behind us. Then James and Sharon tied at 89, and Tommy and Owen 87-85. So that one's only 33-point difference. That's two races. We got plenty of time there. The Cup Series, Andy, you're not mathematically eliminated, but I'll get to you in a minute. Owen took the lead from me. He's got 163. I'm at 161. Sam is at 154. Sharon at 151. Mike at 144. Then James at 127. Tommy 111. Andy at 72. Again, you need absolutely all max points and some help from above. And the overall, I think there's 244 points still left, and we're 100 points separated top to bottom. I'm at 368, Mike at 344, Sam at 343, Sharon 336, Owen 315, Andy 275, James 270, and Tommy 268. So you heard a lot of one-point or ties there throughout all of them. This has been such a great season for this with all eight players we have this year.
Okay, thank you, Jay, for reporting on that and keeping track all season long. Andy, you're up.
Well, Jay, the reason Mike wasn't pointing the finger at you is because he was, in fact, referring to me, since I'm going to be at Talladega this weekend, and Mike's actually sitting directly behind me for the Cup race in the same session. So that should be fun. I've never been there before, so I'm really looking forward to it. I'm doing all three races this weekend, so that should be a good time. And CB14 fan on Twitter, and I can assure you I'm going to probably go about the fantasy points or the Cup Series a little bit differently next year. I just wanted to see how it would shake out. But one thing I won't do is pick a rookie for every single race for next season. I'll be back to my normal. I'll be back to my normal deal next year for sure. But it was just kind of cool to see.
Wait a minute. I'm already calling you out on your technicality because CB will not be a rookie next year, so you're still going to take him every week, and you're not going to take a rookie, so technically you'll be correct.
I'm gonna probably try to go for points next year, I think. So I got to get myself back in the Cup game. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
Okay. Well, it's been fun either way. I am Fan for Racing Psyched on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com. And we've got the recaps up as well as our preview show coming up on Thursday for the races that will be taking place at Talladega Super Speedway. And also, we've got a race coming up at Salem this weekend for the ARCA Menards Series, which is the final race for the Sioux Chief Showdown that will determine the championship for that group. So Jay and I will cover all of that on Thursday night, and we will be back here again next Monday night to review all the racing at Talladega and Salem. So definitely looking forward to that, and as well as the racing this coming weekend. A big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in, and to our Fan for Racing crew, Mike and Jay and Andy, for being here for our Hot Topic Sound Off segment tonight, and for Sal Segala for being here for the first half hour tonight for our review of the racing at Las Vegas. So really appreciate everything from all angles there, and we'll look forward to talking again on Thursday night. So with that, guys, I think we're ready to call it a night here.
All right. Have a great night.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.